is SMC. If it's about school marketing and communications, you'll find it here. It's Insight Applied. And now, here's Brad and Scully.
Hello, school marketers, and welcome to SMC. If it's about school marketing and communications, we'll talk about it here. I'm Brad Entwistle, and this is episode 146 for Wednesday, November 28, 2018. That November 28, it's dangerously close to December. Scully, are you, you know, I know the cricket's about to start. I mean, the real cricket, the five-day cricket, but you're winding up?
I'm winding up. I'm in denial, quite frankly. I still feel it's mid-September, so I've got quite a lot to cram into the rest of the year.
As a good friend of mine said yesterday, I'm so far behind, people think I'm out front.
This is SMC. It's Insight Applied.
And so to news that you can use, and well, Scully, this one's yours, and we can tell by the headline, Emotions, Arousal, and the Science Behind Why Stories Get Shared. What are you doing reading this sort of stuff?
Well, you don't often see the word arousal, do you? Or emotion, for that matter, in relation to marketing. It's done by an interesting mob out in Miami, actually, called Fractal. A guy called Jacob Jones, and he's written well in an interesting study about data visualization, and that ultimately it doesn't work without emotion. We kind of might have had that feeling, but he's applied some science and a bit of historical analysis to actually demonstrate how to make it effectively work within your marketing. Now, the beautiful thing is this lends itself to schools better than almost everywhere. Most of these brands they're talking about really struggle to apply emotion in relation to their the essence of what they're about, whereas schools, it's absolutely perfect. So don't worry, there's a health warning. The word arousal in this case is...
It's scientific.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I love a good marketing story that is based in data. And actually, this time of the year, it's not that far away that most schools will be referring to data in some way as they report to parents and others on the results of usually of year 12s. So infographics is one of those go-to tools. But the point behind this whole article, well backed up by lots of good scientific case studies, is that something like data visualization, whether it's in animation or whether it's an infographic, it relies on emotion. Emotion is the step that you want to get out of it. So it's not just a cold, hard stat.
That's right. And so they looked all the way. I mean, the basics is one of the exercises is to look back at 7,000 articles published by the New York Times, with and the basic theory being that consumers often share content for self-presentation purposes or to communicate identity. But ultimately, we share because we want to bond with those in our network. So how do we work out what is the most effective way to do that?
Sorry, mate. That sounds like a very scientific way of saying we post to make ourselves look good.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, our Facebook persona versus the real world, it can be often a very, very different thing, can't it?
But really, Scully is 21 years old.
Absolutely. Shallower than your average man. But anyway, the next scientific... Well, they use an example going a couple of quotes all the way back to the 1880s when William James developed a pervasive theory that said all emotions were combinations of physiological response to stimuli, facial expressions, core temperature swings, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, in the 60s, two guys, Stanley Schachter and Jerome Singer, announced they didn't believe it entirely. They thought there was the bonding of two elements, arousal, the general bodily changes, and the cognition or thought, equaling emotion, right? We've move on from emotion and arousal into basically how do we get people to click? How do we get people to share? How do we get people to care about your piece of content more than the others? And the type of content you have in a school works well. There were some case studies which were almost scary. It involved injecting people with different things. Imagine what they did back in the 60s. Some of them were placebo, some of them weren't. But they showed that the two elements of euphoria or anger are the two extremes, but the study basically suggested that a physiological response can only be enhanced with the right cognitive context. So you think as well as have the emotional response. Together, those things propel people to share and actually act. So how and what has this got to do with content creators, marketing people?
Well, they've learned that, and this is the interesting one that stood out to me. They've learned that positive emotions are only slightly more likely than negative emotions to make a piece of content take off. I'd always gone to a positive emotion, you know, fluffy cat, I suppose. But kittens, if it's on the Image 7 Slack, it's about cute dogs at the moment. Did you decide on a dog name?
Not yet. Tomorrow, 24 hours till he arrives.
Well, I still maintain dog is a great name. But the positive taking off more than the negative? Not necessarily. They're suggesting sadness and anger are both negative emotions, but anger fuels more sharing because it's high arousal, while sadness is low arousal. And when you start to think about things like that, I think that's making a heck of a lot of sense.
It is. Now, what does this mean on the ground in your office with people yelling above you about end of term events or whatever it may be? Well, there are simple ways we can harness some of these things, and that's using visual along with the content that you've got. Infographics, data-driven animation, they combine to, dare I use the word again, arouse or at least engender some kind of emotional relationship with the content. So don't be afraid to engage visual elements together with the word, sound, music, because it's going to work more effectively for you. So this massive survey with incredibly bright people ultimately says that the key is about giving your audience the freedom to take the next cognitive step on their own. In other words, make them feel good or even bad enough to share what you're saying.
And on to our next item, which is close to my heart, A-B testing. Are we only scratching the surface? And this comes from Mark Sanderson, who is a professor of information retrieval at RMIT University in Melbourne. And he opens with, A-B testing changed the way industry operates. Gone are the days of shrugged shoulders and decisions that are blind button pushing. According to Mark, marketers are yet to see the technique's full potential. So opening, what is A-B testing? Well, it is when you give a user or a customer or a client or a parent access to one of two versions of something. Now, they're talking about information here, websites and that sort of stuff, but the application is a lot wider. And you see what they do with it. Record it. Select the option that is most successful for you. That becomes the new control or the new baseline. And then you test the next thing. So it's this ongoing iterative process of actually getting better, choosing the next best item. So Google ran their first A-B test in 2000 to determine the best number, the optimum number of search results that should be shown on a page. So this happens all the time now, and you don't even know it's happening. When you look at Netflix, it's happening all the time. Apparently, Microsoft, with their Bing search engine, they're running over 1,000 of these different tests every month, and there's so many happening that you might be actually part of an A-B test and you don't even know it because they're testing tiny little changes, not great big changes.
Well, that's right. And you can tell it's written by a professor because the language is, if the prototype is proven superior, it replaces the existing version as the default product. What? So if it
the
works...
The Brad version is, pick the good one.
Exactly. But it's something we should, instead of being intimidated by, and even just worrying about how do we find the time, ultimately, if you find the time for a couple of versions and find the most effective one for you in whatever it is you're trying to do, it's going to save you time. Don't feel intimidated by the process. Don't feel that you're shortchanging anybody. If you make the time, it's going to work for you. And very importantly, statistics decide, not managers. And they've got back this up. They've got a great phrase about hippos. The hippo, the importance of ignoring the views of managers, yes, that could be your principal or your council members, is actually really important because data is everything. The hippo is the highest paid person's opinion. Now, that often, as we, how often have we seen, you know, all sorts of things done, yes, just because the corridors of power say it has to happen when you know that it might not be the most effective? Well, the beauty of A-B testing is you can actually demonstrate what works, or you can put your idea against the hippo's idea and prove that the data will demonstrate, wow, this is the most effective. So trust the data. That's what's going to tell you, really track that return on investment and measure success.
Scully, I can hear our listener right now asking the question, that's brilliant, but I don't have that many people landing on my website. How can this actually be put into play at a school? Now, I know you and I have been doing A-B tests in different ways for donkey's years, well before Image 7. So that was when dinosaurs roamed the earth.
Indeed. A-B testing even used to happen in printed matter. You could print two different versions of the same thing. It gets that old. So you can still do those things. It can be done in enrollment forms. It can be done in a way you share something on social media. So it can be digital. It can be in the real world. But just think about how it's delivered, how many people click on the sports results. There's so many different ways, but don't always just do the same thing because you always have done. There's often a more trustworthy and more effective way to communicate.
And one of the beautiful things out of this, if you just do a simple test, and then as school marketers, you always know that somebody else has got a better opinion or their opinion is more important than yours. You can just say, we've tested it. This one works better. And on to news item number 3, which is all about key challenges for content marketers and comes from the Content Marketing Association. Scully, this is, well, before it was called the Content Marketing Association, this is your old crew, isn't it?
It is. It's why I'm still trawling through international blogs and websites. Yeah, this is, I used to be on the board of this lot.
That's why they had to rebrand to get away from the Scully factor.
That's right. It was all about publishing then. Same, yeah, it's just broadened the ways to get out there. It's not just the written word. It's all sorts of different ways. But yeah, fantastic organization. A lot of clever people running very impressive companies sit on that board. And yeah, they've always got good advice as to how to make your content work for you across all sorts of different sectors.
Now, the first one is improving the quality of the content. And they say this is an ongoing discussion right across the industry. And dare I say it, they start off with Sturgeon's Law, which I'd never heard of, but it stems from a quote from the US science fiction author Theodore Sturgeon, who apparently once stated that 90% of science fiction was crap. And when challenged, he replied that it wasn't unusual, as 90% of everything is crap too. So Scully, is 90% of school content crap?
Well, Thompson, that depends on the eye of the beholder. Everything we create is in some ways content. Think of it that way. Video, be it a newsletter, and I think perhaps we don't always appreciate the audience out there and that it's going to be viewed and seen as important collateral that is supposed to reflect the brand. So I think there is a lot of substandard stuff out there.
Yes. And the second area that they're really wanting to talk with content creators about is improving content effectiveness and measurement. This is, again, this feels a little bit like the science episode. We're bringing science back into it again.
Yes, I'm not sure I've got a single science qualification in my life, but I can hide behind it. And look, I think this is really important. It doesn't need to be too scientific, but at the end of the day, content and what we're producing, we've often done the same as we did last year. Budgets get cut, budgets get grown, unless there's some kind of measurement about effectiveness that we can demonstrate that it's working, there's a return on investment, then we should really think carefully. There's more and more analysis at our fingertips. We need to be able to demonstrate not only to ourselves but to our paymasters that what you are doing is working in the short, medium and long term.
This is SMC. It's insight applied.
And now to a word from our sponsor. And this, of course, is the School Marketing Institute, which brings us the SMC podcast each week. Now, if you're looking to clarify your strategy, powerfully articulate your messaging and integrate it all with a suite of industrial strength digital tools, then it is the time to get a personal introduction to Image 7's School Marketing Institute. School Marketing Institute is a membership platform that helps school heads and marketers to get their marketing under control, make it measurable, and to achieve your goals. Each membership comes with a regular mentoring session with one of Image 7's team of professional school marketers, and you can find out more by visiting image7.com.au/SMI. Our new memberships are limited to one a week, so if it sounds like you'd benefit, visit image7.com.au/SMI and book your introduction.
This is SMC. It's insight applied.
And once again, as is our custom on SMC, we invite one of the team into the studio. And this episode's Nadia Folletti. Nadia hasn't been on SMC before, but that's because she's normally embedded with clients out in Sydney and visiting the Perth office. Welcome, Nadia.
Thank you.
It's great to have you here. And we're going to talk about something very close to all schools' hearts, results, and how you communicate them. So we'll start with a nice lead-in. Why exactly is it even important to communicate results?
As much as we like to think that parents think about everything when they choose a school, about, you know, what sports are offered, what the culture's like, what the values and mission of the school are, often results are the concrete thing that they can use to compare schools. So that's why it's kind of important that we let people know how school's doing.
Absolutely. Like it or not, it's what you're often judged by.
That's right.
You have the greatest key messages in the world, but the parents are looking for that line of results. So who should a school communicate with when they've got this information?
Well, obviously the school community wants to know how the school's gone, and particularly the students that have sat the exam. So the key is to firstly communicate with them so they can look at how their kids did, how the rest of the class went, how the school overall went. But the second thing is to tell the media, because that's where you might get some free publicity for the school.
Mm-hmm. So the media, that lot out there, bless them all. So what's the key? How do we communicating, you know, getting those results across to the media?
I guess the big key is to be prepared. So don't leave it all till the last minute when the results come out, because you just won't get stuff to them fast enough. And for them, they've got to have it in their hand ready to go. They want to be the first out there with the good news of who's done well. So just make sure that you've got stuff ready, be prepared and be available.
Love it. Love it. How do you be prepared to promote these results? Because sometimes they can be quite complex, can't they?
They can. But there is something you can do ahead of time. So you can have photos ready to go of students that you think are going to do well. So identify those kids early. You can make sure you have all your contacts up to date, so you know who to contact, where to send the information. And yeah, just prepare a media release ahead of time. So a lot of the information that's in that doesn't need to be done on the day. You don't want to waste time on the day thinking about how to word things. You can get quotes from your headmaster. You can even get quotes from the kids beforehand. Uh-huh. And include all of that ready to go and just plug in the results at the end.
It's that easy.
It's that easy. Easier said than done.
So get the media lined up, be prepared. It can take a while to actually wade through what's what in those results, can't it? But it's incredibly important and powerful. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is SMC. It's insight applied.
And so to our marketing example. And this episode, Scully, we're getting all a bit meta because we've got a great article which has been authored by Dennis Schauer. And he's an independent marketing consultant and content corner curator, which sounds very, very wonderful, but I'm not sure what it means, but he does it. And this article is on the Content Marketing Institute. However, most of the article, which is in-depth and detailed, is about Tim Schmoyer, who is the CEO of Video Creators, and his presentation at Content Marketing World, titled How to Develop a Loyal YouTube Audience. So if you can imagine a big long article about a conference presentation, and that's what we're talking about here. Two levels. Number one, it's great content talking about YouTube and lots of useful content for school marketers about how to deal with YouTube and how to create content that, inverted commas, YouTube likes. But on an entirely different level, Scully, a great example of Dennis here not necessarily having anything to talk about himself and still made great content out of somebody else's conference presentation.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, so good on him. They used to call it plagiarism, didn't they? But,
no, this is the three sources and it's reporting.
But it's good content itself. So well done to him. What I like about it is he's great tips for how to use YouTube, how to make the most of it. And the facts, as it starts, my teen daughter has not watched television since elementary school. She gets her news and entertainment from YouTube. Now, I can back that up from my lads, much as I'd wish they would be doing other things. YouTube is omnipotent, it would appear. It's everywhere, and it attracts like 1.9 billion users each month. So it's terrifying what's there. But how do you? So a lot of people at schools, they just post Yeah, we'll put it on YouTube, sorted, done and dusted. The world can see it there. But with that kind of volume, yes, there's a lot of people, but there's a lot of content. How do you cut through? So Tim Schmoyer talks well about this. There's actually videos to look at. There's some great tips about massaging the algorithm where you possibly can, building a community, focusing on quality, not metadata. I always find that heartening to read. And then just how you structure your session. So it's broken down easily. Have a look at the show notes. You can see the different ways, steps that he's done to build a YouTube presence.
I think, Scully, just even to call this an article does it injustice. It's more like a mini masterclass.
Yeah, it is. So have a look at it. It even allows you to measure or gives you an idea of how you might measure your loyalty level of regular viewers, people looking at your videos. Good example on many levels. Well done.
So let's just jump back for a moment to what Dennis has done here and its applicability to school marketers. When you think you haven't got any content, when you don't know what you're going to talk about, what about going and sitting in on the school assembly and listening to what the principal says to the students? Or going to the presentation by your junior school staff to parents on parent night, or listening to what the captain of the sports team says at their wind-up. All of those things, and so many more at schools, just provide great content. Become the reporter of what's happening. All it's got to be is one line from the sports captain or the team captain that you can bounce off and say, this is a great example of the school values at play. And then you've got a great piece of content that ticks so many boxes for the school, not only as content, but reinforces the values of the school and gives outsiders, if it is an article that's visible to the public, then gives them a view of what the school is like and what they value. There is so many times when school marketers tell us, Scully, I'm not sure that we've got the amount of content that our school could possibly actually create. We're just not that interesting. We've never got stuck yet.
No. And I think we can call that a Bradster class.
This is SMC. It's Insight Applied.
And now it's time for the rants and the raves. And this is where we hand out a brick bat or a bouquet to a piece of content, a piece of marketing, or just an idea. And this idea comes from Jodie Harris, who's the Director of Editorial Content and Curation. There's that curation word again, at Content Marketing Institute. And effectively, this is a happy Thanksgiving type of post because it's that time of the year in the US. And it's a series of what's the best quote that they've come across, the best piece of advice. And Scully, we just thought we'd do a quick survey across the top because there's some really good pieces of advice here.
Yeah, and it's good. It's good because if we're ever lacking inspiration, of course, living in Perth, the sun's shining and you're never that, but elsewhere in the world.
And the birds are tweeting and it's not like that in Sydney today.
So, but if you're wondering, you've got a moment of frustration. Sometimes these quotes can inspire or just give you a little bit of an insight at how to do your job better. For example, just write down what it is you're trying to achieve. Document your content marketing mission statement. How often do we just do it without actually thinking about it? Now, a great friend of SMC, Joe Polizzi, the founder of CMI, actually gave that piece of advice, and it's so applicable, and yet bleeding obvious in many ways, but so often we just do it without documenting what it is we're trying to achieve.
And what I love about that is that that's just not idle advice from Joe. They proved it statistically with surveys with people about their and companies about their content marketing mission statements, and just the fact of writing it down produces a significant impact in the effectiveness. And one from Gary Vaynerchuk, when you're stuck trying to create content, one thing you should do is document your journey. I think that's deep.
Well, hopefully, depends how stuck you got and what you're stuck in. But it is because that's, it's all about learning as well, and about, even the difficult times, learning lessons and just getting better about what you do. And there's another one along those lines. A woman called Anne Krach from Convince and Convert actually quotes her boss without giving her boss the name, who said, great words, you'll make a mistake, and when you do, come to me and we will solve it. With that mindset, you'll go far in marketing.
And one from somebody I don't know, Brian Fanzo, quote, push the damn button, go push the button, make the thing, press record, publish the piece. I thought that is just So on the money for schools, we get stuck in trying to make it 100% perfect before we push the button and publish, or we talk about doing a little video series or something like that, but we never actually push the button. So a good piece of advice there.
Yeah, and a couple of other ones. You need to know yourself well, and remember your value and your values. Like these really apply not only to you as an individual, but to the essence of your school brand, the core of who you are and what it is you represent. So keep on track. And if you're wondering what's going on, get back to what the actual values are in the first place, and you won't go wrong.
Let your why be your guide. And of course, that one is referred to in Simon Sinek's book, Start With Why. If you haven't read it, great book. Really recommend that as a bit of Christmas reading. Another one, Focus on What Doesn't Change, which is a little Japanese idiom. And one to finish up, if you aren't willing to innovate, accept that you will stagnate. That's cutting to the bone, Scully.
It is for an old man like me. You've got to keep pedaling, haven't you? You've got to keep going. It keeps you on your toes and it's interesting. So there's plenty more in those show notes. But again, it's good to just stop for a moment now and then and think about how can I do things better? Lots of inspiration out there.
This is SMC. It's Insight Applied.
And that pretty much brings us to the end of this episode 146 of SMC. Now, if you're listening from the Image 7 website, you can pop over now to your favourite podcast player and subscribe, and you'll get your fortnightly dose of school marketing and communications goodness delivered right to your device. Just search for SMC, School Marketing and Communications, and you'll find us there. Now, if you've got any questions, comments, marketing examples, or a rant or rave of your own, you can email us at smc@image7.com.au. And that is it for this episode of SMC. From Scully and myself, Brad Entwistle, bye for now.
Goodbye.